Good. Okay, this is Michael Welch for CKUW, and I'm joined on the line by Jeffrey Young. He is one of the interveners in the recent case involving the charter challenge on the legal.
Or pardon me if I can correct you on that.
Okay.
I'm not an intervener. I'm contributing to the submissions from the Sex Professionals of Canada for the Peter McKay Roundtable, which is starting Monday.
Okay, thanks for that clarification. Okay, so one of the people who's submitted as part of the Sex Professionals of Canada, the SPOC, to the roundtable. So Jeffrey, this is going to be read. Your contribution will be read this Monday, March 3rd. It starts March 3rd.
Well, basically, what has happened, as everybody might have heard, and as we have been covering better than anybody on CKUW for years, Valerie Scott, AAL, the Sex Professionals of Canada, under the lawyership of one Alan Young, managed to win a 9-0 unanimous Supreme Court decision overturning our really heinous prostitution laws back in December. Clearly, there's going to be a legislative response to that. New laws need to be made. This is the quote unquote input phase where the government quote unquote takes the input of involved groups and is going to try to come up with, well, legislation.
So that's basically to address the inequities that were clearly ruled in that charter challenge.
The law was found to be unconstitutional, was found to basically like put women's lives at risk, which is actually the truth of the situation. Something I don't need to tell people living on the prairies.
Okay. Now, in terms of this current procedure, maybe I should ask first of all, what were the points that you raised that in this roundtable, or that will be presented?
My submissions is or my part is that Sex Professionals of Canada asked me to write a short paper explaining in development terms some of the pitfalls of rescue mentality. What is coming down the pipes is something called the Nordic model, as found in the Nordic countries, and it basically criminalizes the clients instead of the workers, but still having essentially the same outcome of pushing the industry into the dark, which is where women go missing.
Okay.
The Nordic, yeah, and this Nordic model, it's just not relevant to Canada, for a number of reasons. To me, the most glaring of which is that we don't have the sort of social services that these Nordic countries do. We don't have the free education. We don't have the welfare adequate to survive off of, or any of that sort of stuff. So, like maybe for the Nordic countries, it might be reasonable, but for a Canadian context, it just does not work, and it takes control out of the hands of the women themselves, which is precisely opposite to the point of the entire legal case in the first place. So my submissions, I've been asked to address the pitfalls of this rescue mentality in terms of development. And so I'm basically pointing out the difference between self-determination and your rescue mentality as we have seen it. Examples I use are the formation of Canada and the United States as self-determination, both which are, arguably, depending on who you talk to, could be considered two of the most successful national projects in human history. On the other side, rescue mentality historically has led to situations like, the civilization of our First Nations people by systems such as the residential schools. That was a project of like basically alienated intervention in an entire society, and we see the outcome of that. Another good example could be the nation of Haiti, which is now basically a donor state with no economic base to speak of, for basically the same reason. A long modern history of intervention of foreigners, outsiders, people not involved, who think they know better, but end up not to. And if you look at all these examples, in most cases, the commonality is conflict. The commonality is just an absolutely negative impact in all many communities that have been subjugated to outside interference in the name of rescue or saving or civilization. And even worse is that in this context, it implies that these women don't know their own mind, which is absolutely ridiculous, because these women just won a 9-0 decision in the Supreme Court of Canada.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jeffrey, these women who are, I mean, they've made that choice to take on these sorts of jobs, and whatever one might think about this, they're basically whatever they're, in my experience anyway, a lot of women who do take on these tasks, I mean, their options are limited. I mean, it's not necessarily the case across the board, but I mean, when you do have women who are restricted to this option, and they are, say, convinced okay, I will not take this on, well, they don't often have a lot of options, and then the rescuers, as you put them, what are they doing to assist?
I fully support economic development strategies and programs for all women everywhere. It doesn't necessarily mean that it is like relevantly tied to the same sort of issue. It's not a trap into itself. The trap may be not being able to afford one's education. The trap in some cases may be having to raise your kids or something like that. And I definitely support a full plurality of options for all women all the time, no matter what. That said, the legislative regime as it was with criminalization, and now with this Nordic model, criminalization of the clients, it pushes it into the shadows. And, you know, there's not a lot of light in the shadows, and thus it's a very good place from which women vanish. No matter what you think of prostitution, it would be insane to suggest that it should be a death penalty crime. Which, with the criminalization model, in a lot of cases, it seems that may be the actual result. And one needs only look as far as Robert Picton to find evidence of that.
Okay. Now, we're talking about going into this this round table. Is there anything about this process that you find concerning?
It's a strange one, Michael. It's a strange one. Sex Professionals of Canada is one of the groups that have been asked to contribute. We understand there are 12 to 15 other groups, but the government is refusing to tell us who they are or give us a list of them. Most of them are probably failed interveners, or interveners who failed in getting their case across effectively, as evidenced by this 9-0 decision. On top of that, there will be minutes taken, but the government will not be circulating copies of these minutes to any of the contributors. So basically, it seems that in a way, we don't get to know what we're participating in. We don't get to know what we're being part of. We don't get to know what organizations are saying what. We don't get to know who these organizations are. And this is just not the way a decision-making process, especially one that leads to legislation, should be carried out in a democratic country. In fact, it's a little bit nuts. And I am not speaking on behalf of anybody but myself, think that it should be an entirely open process, even with the procedures being publicly broadcast over the internet, for example, so that all Canadians can know what sort of debate is going on vis-a-vis the creation of laws that we have to live by. It's not Soviet Russia, basically. End of story there.
Well, you know, usually I've seen committee meetings. I mean, they're broadcast live, but there's something. I guess this isn't a committee meeting per se. It's called a roundtable, but yes. There isn't even a live feed. You can't, for example, reply to what other people may say. Say, well, they're mistaken about this. Do you know who you don't know who's presenting, but can you at least say if they're, you know, in favor
we have a fair idea of who it's going to be. A lot of them are going to be interveners in the case, like, for example, the Real Women of Canada and whatnot. And they're going to come forward trying to see progressive with sort of like rescue mentality. Oh, these poor women, they're too stupid to know their own minds and all this sort of stuff is basically what we're expecting. But we're not entirely sure that we're even going to find out what is contributed. Do you know what I mean? It seems like this process in which there will be inputs made, and the rest is kind of happening in obscurity.
Well, that sounds like it could be the focus of a challenge in itself. This process.
Well, absolutely. Let alone that the Nordic model will only leave over. Only leave the situation open to future charter challenges, which, you know, they're very expensive things on the behalf of a government. The government has spent millions of dollars in fighting this specific case and losing spectacularly. And now they're going to set up a situation where they have to go through the whole thing again. Now, just in terms of fiscality, being conservative, it doesn't really to me seem like the economically conservative thing to do, to be blowing all his money on cases that are just going to be lost.
Well, do you know, I mean, you're mentioning, like, it's Peter MacKay's round table. Who's sitting at that table? Who's sitting at this meeting that's going to be listening to these and reading these presentations?
We don't know. I am not entirely sure. I haven't had the opportunity to connect with Valerie in the past couple of days. I'm living in Leon, Nicaragua. And so we're not entirely sure, or I am not entirely sure. But as it goes on, if you want to have us back on, or maybe if we can get you Valerie or something like that, I'll come armed with the full maximum information possible for you.
Okay. Well, it's a very fascinating stuff.
In a kind of surrealistic sort of way.
So what is the aim of this? I mean, I guess this would be speculation on your part, but what would possibly be achieved by keeping this whole or eliminating the transparency in this process?
I think that the goal is to be able to push forward with his Nordic legislative model in a way that satisfies what the ruling party sees as its kind of conservative religious base. I think that is it. But once again, that is only my opinion. It's not the sort of thing that can be super strongly evidenced until sort of after the legislation is put through and we see the thought process and the decision-making process they've gone through in order to arrive at the legislation they finally pass.
So have you, has Spock determined how they're going to address this process, if at all?
As we speak, they're trying to get into the media as much as possible and just trying to get their side and their position out there. That will do for now. We don't imagine that there's a lot that can be done. We don't imagine that our contributions are going to hold much weight. Hey, we may be surprised. After all, we weren't expecting a 9-0 ass-kicking decision in their favor either. But my personal opinion is that we're going to see another future years-long charter challenge, this time to the Nordic model.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting perspective. It doesn't seem as if there's a lot of information about this roundtable accessible to the public.
There really isn't. And it's really only because of my involvement with the story that I even know about it in the first place, which is strange because, it is a case that people are watching. It's a case that I've had feedback from friends over social networking and stuff from all over the world that have, comments and two cents and indicate that they're watching with some interest in what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly, it certainly was amazing news when it came out, when it was announced that decision, that ruling was made. But I guess we're just going to have to watch closely and see how things pan out. I guess as it stands right now, you're anticipating the Nordic model is going to be introduced, and then you're back to the courts.
Off we go. Repeat. Okay. And if I could just to add a little bit of color, a little bit of story to it. It was actually me and Haiti CKUW partner extraordinaire Liam O'Doherty that got to go and pick up Valerie at the airport after the decision was handed down. And I don't think I've ever seen such a happy person in all my days. She has worked tirelessly on this case for years, but on kind of the overall work backing the case for decades. It's become her kind of life's work in a lot of ways, and to see that actually pay off for her was absolutely amazing.
Mm. Well, certainly, we've had Valerie on CKW in the past, of course, and it certainly would be great to hear from her again, so maybe we can line that up at some point. Jeffrey,
I'm sure we can once the submission time is all through and they're not quite as absolutely busy.
Yeah.
I can tell you that the tidal wave of world media that they were hit with after the decision, we were expecting it wouldn't be too bad because of the proximity to Christmas, but to the best of my knowledge, they are still getting absolutely creamed with media requests from media of all levels, all over the world.
Okay, well,
so it is a pretty big story right now.
Okay, well, thank you very much for sharing that information. I don't know if there's anything that you would want to say to listeners who, if there's any way they could get involved in some capacity or other than sort of sharing this information.
Yes. Yeah, the first thing is to inform yourselves. Learn about the case and what was going on. That is best achieved by visiting www.spoc.ca and just having a look at the case and the history of it as it appears there. There are loads of YouTube clips up now from the past couple months. So the first step would be to inform themselves. And after that, contact your MP. Especially if you're in a conservative riding, or if you're from a conservative riding, and just give them your opinion, whatever it should be. Personally, it's really nothing to us whether it's an opinion that I'm in accordance with or not in accordance with. The important thing in a democracy is that you just get heard. And get your own two cents in there. We personally believe that in this case, the unanimous 9-0 Supreme Court decision was a fairly accurate reflection of the values of Canadians. And I guess that just makes it all the more sad that the response is to move ahead with equally regressive legislation.
Mm. Okay. Well, Jeffrey Young, I want to thank you very much for speaking about the Peter McKay's roundtable on the response to the charter challenge on the prostitution. legalization.
Yeah, and I may be slightly slightly fudgy on some of the facts, and it's entirely possible that there has been developments or procedure developments since I last talked to Valerie that I have not been able to include in this interview, and I hope that if the situation changes or corrections are necessary, that you'll have me on again to give them.
Okay, for sure. Jeffrey Young, thank you very much for joining us.
All right, thank you very much. And Michael, can you do me a favor?
What?
Just because of the internet here and connectivity here, do you think you could maybe grab an MP3 of this show when you air it and just fire it off to my Gmail?
Sure.
That would be much appreciated.
Okay. Just cool. The whole show or just this segment?
Either or.
Okay.
Either or, maybe like the segment with the ins and outs from whatever was previous. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah, like something that has kind of the station ID and intro included in it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure thing.
All right.
Okay.
Cool. Thanks, Mike.
All right.
Right on. We'll catch you soon.